to get intimate with Checkpoint Intimates.
Hello, you're listening to Checkpoint Intimates, where two of the Checkpoint team get one-on-one and get real intimate about a topic. My name is Cameron, and I'm joined by Elliot.
Hello.
Hello. So I'm driving the ship today.
I'm a passenger. I plan to sabotage everything. There's a gremlin on the side of the bus. Don't slow down under 60. There's a bomb I planted.
That episode of The Simpsons where the gremlin was on the bus actually...
You know it's not originally from The Simpsons,
No,
right?
No, I know. But it's on a plane. You specifically mentioned a bus.
Okay. No, you got me. You got me.
The bus
Look
is
at you
specifically
go.
The Simpsons.
Look at you go. Understanding things.
Pop culture reference queen. And we wanted to take a chance because... when you're listening to this a week ago...
what does that sentence even mean?
Because they'll be listening to this in a week's time when we're recording it.
So in a week from now, not a week ago.
No, a week past from when they're listening to it, Borderlands 3 got announced.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. So Borderlands 3, back in the past where we are right now, just got announced yesterday. And... it kind of reignited...
Can we do this whole show in multiple timelines?
Yes.
Like, you're from the past, I'm from the present, our listeners listen from 1930s.
And which one of us is in Westworld?
And who goes back to kill themselves at the end?
Whoa. So, Borderlands 3, the trailer has dropped. We knew it was kind of coming. It was hinted towards that it was on its way, but we didn't want to play everything because we were worried they were going to do a Skyrim. And just re-release it in a new mode. And this time you can play as Link.
There was some genuine fear that with all the Borderlands teasing, we weren't going to get a Borderlands 3. And it's like, well, then why tease so much?
Yeah.
Like, can you calm down and just announce it if it's something lame? But it wasn't something lame. It was Borderlands 3.
Yeah. So we thought we'd have a look at what has come before with Borderlands and how it's become kind of an icon in modern gaming.
Yeah. At the time of recording, between recording and posting this... the date April 3rd will have come and gone.
Which is where they're dropping more info.
More information on Borderlands 3 is coming. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about the history of the series as a whole.
And just some small things about what we know so far.
Yeah.
So let's dive right in. Borderlands 1 comes out. Not to a huge fanfare. Gearbox was kind of known.
No? I thought that was quite a well-received, well-liked game.
It was. That's what I'm saying. It came out, but... it was a new IP in a world that was already like so rife with, you know, repeats and copies, and it was, you know, new IPs weren't always as welcome as they are.
Well, it's a much bigger risk when you do a new IP. People don't know the series, so it's harder to jump on board.
And the big thing with this one, so what I don't think people a lot of know was Borderlands actually spent a lot of time in development. Development hell, some would say. It actually went through a complete and utter art direction breakdown and rebuild up, because when it was first shown, it had photorealistic graphics.
Which seems so weird now, looking back at the franchise, because one of the things Borderlands is so well known for, and honestly, it kind of inspired a lot of copycats who did similar art styles, is that cel-shaded kind of comic or like graphic look to it.
I think it brought into the modern era of gaming a return to the idea of being braver with your art direction. At that point in time, things like Call of Duty were like... maintaining all the bases and going for either cartoony was child's games, and if you wanted to be taken real, you had to have the most realistic graphics. They had to look like real people. So when it released its first its teaser trailer, it was these photorealistic graphics. Everyone looked at it and went, okay, more of the same, I guess. And people were really unimpressed. People did not want to get involved. Cycle forward, I think, 2 years later, and it re-showed itself as it was getting ready to release, and everyone's like, what is this? It was like it wasn't really bright and colorful, but it was definitely like a different direction, much more colorful than anything we were getting at that point in time.
I wonder if when they made that art style kind of change of pace, they also did an entire tonal change of pace, because Borderlands kind of reflects its art style in that it doesn't take itself seriously. It's a bit of a comical approach, a lot of jokes in there, a lot of ridiculousness.
I remember the original trailer, a lot of people were speaking about it, because this is back in the day when it was actually really hard to like actually see a trailer if you weren't at one of these events. You know, YouTube had
back
only just
in the
begun.
Day before YouTube. I don't think so.
No, like it was still like early
We're
days.
We're only
though.
Talking about like
no, but you know how like today companies upload onto YouTube as they release. That wasn't a thing back then. Digital marketing wasn't as big back when it was first. It was still just starting out.
Yeah.
So I remember seeing it, but it was like someone had recorded it at an event or something.
one of those great videos.
Yeah, one of those great high-quality videos. but it definitely had a much more somber tone to it. Cycle forward, it releases. It's bombastic. It's funny. It's childish, but like not in a heavy-handed, gross way. There was just a bit of life and personality to all these characters. It's also one of those ones that did a really good job of creating like the hero shooter. And what it really did that I think a lot of things were trying at the time, and some had really hit the nail on the head, but it definitely found a really good balance on co-op.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It had one of the most balanced co-op options in terms of if I wanted to play with someone, and how it played out was one of the most enjoyable I'd had. There was no kind of joining a game and none of my progression means anything. There was none of that. You progressed alongside each other. You could play together and not lose anything.
And honestly, there weren't that many options for co-op shooters.
Nope.
There just weren't. Those games didn't really exist to this level.
You had split screen like multiplayer.
Oh, yeah.
But
of
playing
course.
Together, you had things like The Resistance was really big from Sony at the moment on the PlayStation 3. But
there's not many options.
There's not that many beyond that. Ooh.
In fact, Borderlands, I'd say, kind of almost invented its own genre in the kind of looter shooter aspect, which a lot of games are mimicking now, although they are taking it to a more online space, whereas Borderlands was definitely a more campaign-focused, cooperative experience.
One of the most annoying things about playing couch co-op on the original Borderlands was the fact that it thought that the best screen split was a vertical.
Spleen script?
Yeah.
Mm, why does that word make my skin crawl?
It should. But a vertical screen split. So rather than having a horizontal split, it was vertical. And so you would play in two vertical planes on an FPS. Not the best option.
Mm.
I will always remember how frustrating it was. And when it moved to that horizontal, I think in number two, I went, oh my God, I can see again. But then, so we had number one, a huge success. People loved it.
Oh, yeah.
And then number two absolutely upped the ante.
Yep, smashed it out of the park.
And number two is, again, something that I think we can accredit to bringing vibrancy back into the gaming as well in terms of color. They looked at kind of the reaction to the very brown world they created in the first one and went, okay.
Well, here's somewhere we can improve. Here's somewhere we can look at, adapt.
And boy, did they.
A little bit more beautiful.
So, in terms of, like, two is where you started to really actually get a really solid plot as well. So, the first one ends, you're looking for a vault, you find the vault, there's some characters that you meet along the way. So, it was very character-driven.
Yeah.
But there wasn't much plot to it. Two became this melodrama.
I don't know, I think there was definitely plot, but yeah, I agree.
It's those small little worlds. They're like, the reality is, our main four characters, Brick, Lilith, Mordecai, and
Zero?
No, Zero's in two. Axel, the soldier.
Oh, it could have been Axel, yeah.
Axel's the soldier in two.
Oh, damn it.
Dallas?
No, that doesn't sound right.
I don't know, he died. spoiler alert, he dies in number two. They didn't really have a drive beyond finding the vault. Like, you had this voice that would appear, the angel, and she'd speak to me like, you've got to go here.
Yeah, there was a lot of... In fact, Borderlands had a lot of disembodied voices kind of guiding you, whereas I think Borderlands 2, while it did the same kind of thing, the characters felt like more real characters.
Well, Handsome Borderlands,
Jack was a great character.
Borderlands 2, you met your characters face-to-face more often, you got to know their character a lot better, and the voice acting was just, oh, so good. So, two actually got us much more into kind of a narrative space. We got to...
The soldier was called Roland.
Roland! Oh, Roland.
Ah, just Roland things.
Just Roland things. People forgetting your name. but two got us into this kind of melodrama of this, you know, this world on the edge of society that didn't want to change and kind of... consumerism coming to this world and wanting to capitalism, basically. Yeah. It was a fight against capitalism. And you became part of this ragtag bunch that were fighting off against Handsome Jack and the Hyperion company that he owned.
Yeah, they really did give a personality to not only the characters, but even the corporations that were kind of ruling.
Yeah.
Like, what was the corporation that had just... The guns were so cheap that rather than reloading them, you just threw them away.
Oh my God, I love those guns. Yeah, it was basically like when you got down, and depending on when you reloaded... So you would reload and they would just teleport you a new gun because it was cheaper than implementing a reload function. And so depending on how many bullets were left in your gun, when you threw it was how big of an explosion it made.
Yeah.
That was a great gun. I can't remember its name though. Oh God, I know so much about Borderlands, but I can't remember that.
But I don't know that.
You were introduced to like a savage world that actually probably felt savage. Like, they did a really good job of balancing that kind of people living together and banding together. And also just a real Mad Max, a huge Mad Max style.
Entire DLC was based on Mad Max.
Yeah.
Mad Moxie's
Thunderdome. Or something. Yeah. And so you met all these characters. You got to learn them. You got to love them. And there's some poignant, like, plot points all through, too. Like, in terms of, like... father-daughter relationships, loss, letting go, and a lot on capitalism. A lot. So it was quite interesting to see it go in the story way. Following that, we take a break and we go to the pre-sequel, which was set around Handsome Jack and some of the enemies you met in 2.
A game I never really gave much time to, I'll have to admit.
Yeah, I played a little bit, but it was definitely... Its biggest letdown is it released on the PS3 a month after the PS4 came out, I think.
Yeah, it's such an awkward phase, isn't it? And it never felt like the fully fledged sequel that people wanted. And so it always felt like this.
It felt like DLC.
Offshoot. Yeah. It was like this extra thing. And sometimes I'm just like, I can't be bothered with the extra things.
It was really interesting to play it and meet a whole bunch of the old, like the villains that you had defeated in 2, seeing where they had come from, including, I think one of them was from 1. Is it Athena?
I don't know.
The one with the shield that she would show. She turns up again later in Tales of the Borderland, which we'll get to.
Right.
But it was one that everyone was like, yeah, this is fun, but no one really got into it that much. It was set on the moon, it had some cool gravity, and it was one of those DLCs where, like, now we're going to add these things that you didn't really need in a full game, like gravity, like having to worry about your oxygen.
Well,
and that
it felt
kind
a little
thing.
Bit experimental, didn't it?
Yeah. But from there, we then got Tales of the Borderlands, which I want to talk about.
Yeah, let's please do that.
Which Tales of the Borderlands, to me, I think stands as one of, if not the best, Telltale game.
Yeah, I agree. I'm 100% with you. And it's really interesting because Tales of the Borderlands came at a time where I almost felt like over the Telltale formula. I was almost like,
yes,
like a lot of the games they were releasing felt unimportant, that I didn't need to like visit those games because they were no longer hitting these highs like The Walking Dead did, or like what was the fairy tale?
Wolf Among Us.
The Wolf Among Us.
Yeah.
And so releases, especially stuff like Batman and stuff, I was just like such a snore fest.
Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy released before that, and it was hugely popular in the movies, and it just missed the mark completely.
And they also did, I think, the Minecraft one, which admittedly was more for aimed at kids.
I think that
kids.
Came out after.
Did it? Okay. Yeah. But regardless, Tales of the Borderlands was like, oh my god, yes, this team does still have amazing writers. This team does still have some awesome talent working behind them, and they can make these really cool stories. And it's interesting because I don't know that Borderlands was ever... Like, it was never a universe that captivated me the most, right?
Yep.
Like, of all the Telltale things, they did some universes that were phenomenal. Stuff like Game of Thrones and, you know, even The Walking Dead, which the TV series got a bit bad, but at least there's, like, some really interesting things there.
A lot of stuff that they were taking from have these rich narratives that existed with them already, whereas, you know, Borderlands, it definitely was there, but it wasn't, like, it wasn't world-built like some of these other things were.
No, definitely not. So, to then have this really awesome story delving, like, you know, and Handsome Jack is back, obviously playing quite a large role.
Yeah,
and
like closing out his narrative, and also just dealing with characters. What I loved is dealing with these everyday characters and about them stepping up in a world that they were unprepared for.
Well, yeah, this is going like back in time, right? Tales of the Borderlands is almost like Jack getting into power at Hyperion, right? Despite the fact what do you mean?
This is after Jack's gone.
Is it?
Yeah, Jack is dead. Yeah, he dies at the end of 2.
Oh, spoilers.
And he exists as an AI.
Right.
That he saved his AI at the end of the first episode. You find this AI chip and Reese puts it in his head, and then he's basically getting followed around like Patrick Swayze and Ghost. And he's Whoopi Goldberg.
Don't you get to experience a lot of his journey through Hyperion as a company, though?
No, that's Reese, because Reese is a company man from Hyperion.
Okay.
So he works...
It has been a while, I've
got to admit. He works at Hyperion, but is, like, low level. And so he, like, plots with someone about how they're going to do this thing down on Pandora, and that'll set them up, and he'll get a promotion and all this stuff. So Jack is dead, because Zero turns up in the first episode of Tales of Borderlands, and basically, while you're busy running away from, like, one psycho are the enemies in Borderlands, Zero turns up and like kills 50 of them, and it's this you see this narrative difference between you and Zero. So then it's all about collecting these characters, some of which you've met from games, including one who was kind of beloved and has a very interesting end in Tales of the Borderlands, very heroic. You got to meet with, I think it's Athena again, the soldier from the pre-sequel who has the shield, and it's actually revealed that she is in a relationship with another female character, giving us a nice LGBT representation.
Oh, there's so many LGBT characters throughout the Borderlands franchise.
Yeah. So this was a really nice one to see, this relationship with Jenny Springs, who is a mechanic that she has a relationship with, who, you know, you bounce off each other really well. She kind of joins the team, and it becomes like... it's almost like a Guy Ritchie take on Borderlands, in that kind of low-level criminals doing stuff, and it's like multiple shots of the same thing happening against each other. I think it was just a really lovely thing. And so at the end of Tales of the Borderlands, it leaves you on a cliffhanger with what happens with our protagonists, revolving around a vault that they've discovered. And I was like, am I ever going to find out what happened?
Probably not.
Where have they gone?
Now that Telltale are gone.
Well, you say that, but those characters are in the trailer for Borderlands 3.
It was really impressive to see that it appears like Gearbox are taking Tales of the Borderlands as canonical.
Yep.
Which is really interesting because, yeah, it was a spin-off made by another developer, but obviously it meant a lot to Gearbox, and they probably worked quite well with Telltale alongside them to create this universe, which means that all these things that happen and all these characters actually exist, and it means that Borderlands 3 can be this continuation of the story.
Yep. So we've had a little bit of a chat about the Borderlands 3 trailer in our up-to-date podcast, which you can go back and listen to, but let's have a quick little overview of it. They've brought back all these characters, all these great faces that you get to see again, which I'm excited to see again, from all the different games, including like DLC characters from the pre-sequel that, you know, some people may not know. I'm super excited to see them get some time, including who looks like Handsome Jack's body double from when he was young. Timothy rhymes with Jimothy. He basically goes as Handsome Jack's body double in the pre-sequel, so you could play as Handsome Jack with it not being Handsome Jack.
Right.
And it looks like he's turning up in this one, because there's someone who looks like what Handsome Jack would look like if he had let himself age naturally. you've got like Zero coming back. I saw Maya has grown her hair and is got a really cool design going on. And it was seeing these characters that I've interacted with for, God, hundreds of hours. Like, Borderlands is one of those games that I looked at the end and just went, oh, I played that for so long.
Yeah.
I think the only game that I've played as much as I have played Borderlands is Destiny. And maybe Dying Light. Maybe. Yeah. Probably not.
Bit of a theme going here.
Yeah. Cooperative games that I can play with my husband. It's what we do in our downtime. Date night will be Borderlands 3. But I want to know. So we've seen our four kind of classes. Elliot, do you have any idea which class you'll be playing?
I don't. I'd have to get way more information. Usually I steer clear of the kind of melee class, so I don't, but unfortunately that means the Siren this time around, which has been such an awesome class every other game, but I don't know, maybe the mech.
My gut reaction is I'm playing that Siren.
I'd probably be either the mech or the kind of like the Animal Hunter one.
I'm fairly certain my husband Rowan's going to play the Animal Hunter one. Yeah. Like, I'm just looking at it going, I'm pretty sure. But, yeah.
But we need more information.
I'm probably going to go with the Siren. I've played the Siren, and the first time I played Borderlands 2, I played as Zero, and I really enjoyed it. But then I replayed it as the Siren, and I was like, oh, I'm getting so much more enjoyment out of this.
Yeah, that's fair.
Sirens, for those that don't know, are basically these mythological women that have magic powers that exist in the world of Borderlands. But there's only ever 6 at once. And really interesting, the teaser trailer that came out for Borderlands 3 before its official release came with a secret message that essentially told us to count the sirens.
Did you count them? How many are there? Are there like 5 or 6 already?
There's so a lot. Alive.
Alive.
I think I count 4.
How many dead are you counting?
Well, because spoiler for 2, Angel dies in 2 after Jack kills her, his daughter. And there's the one at the end of 1 when she gets skewered by the monster inside the vault.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
People forget her because she was such a nothing character.
Right.
I don't think you met her till the end.
Right.
But she had the tattoos, which is why we know she was a siren.
So we've got Lilith. The new siren.
We've got the new siren, who I'm going to call her Kali for now, until we have a name. Well, because her arms are based off the goddess Kali.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to call her Kali for now.
We got Kali.
Carly.
We got Lilith.
We got Maya. And we've got
the antagonist.
Who is Trina?
Trina.
Someone, basically, I've gone through. This is what Borderlands does to me. Having seen an article about it, decided I would go through and have a look at some of the background details.
Yeah.
And there's a poster that has, a poster for the children of the vault that they're the two leaders of. They're called the Calypso.
Calypso twins, yeah. I remember seeing that.
And then there's like one of them is Troy and the other one's like Trino or something like that. I can't remember, but it's a T name. But the interesting thing is Troy features some of the markings that sirens sometimes have on them. There's talk of maybe, you know, in the womb, they're identical twins. Like, they're twins, so like, did he...
Maybe he counts
take
as
some
one.
Of that? Is he a siren? So I actually want to bring up really quickly, at PAX 2015... I think it was PAX 2015. No, PAX 2016. Gearbox were here. And who's the head of Gearbox?
Randy Pitchford.
Yeah, Randy Pitchford did a talk at the Diversity Lounge. And someone actually questioned him about the idea of a transgender character within the world of Borderlands. And he said that, you know, Siren was attached to gender, but he was very interested in perhaps touching on a character who was male to female, transgender, and was a siren.
Oh.
Yeah.
But that's not what appears to be happening with this male character who has siren abilities.
But, you know, we don't know if that has... It's not what's going on with one of these other characters.
Yes,
that
well, of course.
So I'd be interested to see if that's the direction that he went. He did speak about gender. He spoke about gender and the siren powers in that talk, and about how it's, you know, he wanted it connected to the female gender, but that doesn't mean that gender isn't... something that is not set in stone.
Right. It can be fluid.
Yes. So I don't know if we're going to see the brother take on some of these powers or something like that, but, you know.
Interesting.
We can only wait and see. I did note that in the trailer, you do see Lilith has lost her tattoos, which you get when you have your Lilith powers.
Hmm.
Well, so when you have your siren powers. So I don't know if we're going to see Lilith stripped of her powers.
There are certainly a lot of questions unanswered.
Yes.
And it's definitely why we're excited to hear more when more information rolls around. It's actually so close. April 3rd is so close. And the amazing thing is that that's when the Borderlands Game of the Year edition releases. So I know I'm going to restart that as a series because it's just a free update for if you've got it on PC, which is just amazing. So I'm just going to do that.
Maybe I'll play it with you.
Would you buy it on PC to play
it? Yeah,
I'd be so down for that.
Okay, cool. But yeah, Borderlands, get behind it. It's just fun.
Yeah.
It was a breath of fresh air in an industry that needed it.
And I think a lot of people mock it for its sense of humor. But I'm glad it doesn't take itself seriously. And yeah, a lot of the jokes can be meme-based and just overly stupid.
Some
but
stuff can fall flat, and I've admitted that. But at the same time...
But humor's hard. And honestly, if Borderlands can like get it right 50% of the time, that's more than your average game.
And you know what? Based on its humor versus a lot of other humor in our industry right now, it's very rarely at anyone's expense except its own.
Yeah, that's very true.
It never makes fun of, like, minorities or anything like that. It actually has great diversity. Like, I commend its world building in terms of diversity and acceptance and stuff, and the fact that, yeah, it's just positive comedy for the most part.
I don't see people praising the writing as much as they should. I was fascinated by the Borderlands writing, like, straight away. It captivated me. I remember young me, when the game first released, actually kind of writing down a lot of the kind of conversations that happened, just because I'm like, that's so fascinating. I would have remembered that. And I don't remember many games that made me do that.
And, yeah, well, I think that's across the characters as well. Like, I fell in love with these characters.
I love Tannis.
There is a reason that Borderlands cosplay is still some of the best cosplay you see out there.
Oh, yeah, shirtless guys.
Okay, there's that. But also, like, just there's so much of it still out there. It's still one of the most cosplayers video games. It's up there with League and... Overwatch. Yeah, like, it's... You will always find...
Because the characters, they have personalities, and they're so vibrant.
And I love seeing people recreate the art style in physical form.
Yeah.
To end us out, Elliot, I want you to tell me what dance move is Claptrap going to steal from popular culture?
Oh, stop.
Because I told you that I think
you know what my answer would be.
He's going to floss.
It's so such a frustrating question.
Claptrap is going to floss, and we're all going to have to deal with that.
I don't know if I'm ready.
If he doesn't floss, he'll do one of the other Fortnite dances. You know it.
We know Claptrap's going to do something stupid.
Ending it here, Claptrap's going to floss. My name is Cameron. I've been joined by Elliot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening as well.
Yeah.
Stick around. There's heaps more podcasts that you can go back and listen to if you've enjoyed our voice.
You can also rate this podcast if you want. It always helps us out. Subscribe and rate, because that's how we get new people to...
Exactly. If get in on this content. You get to hear all of our great content all the time.
Yeah.
Until next time, guys. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Checkpoint Intimates. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher.